brush the back, stuff left and plate.
I'm the monster, coming in closer. I won't ya. I'm not never worried about competition. Listen, I could twist men into pretzels. My jet skills can't outrun, cause it's fun. I'm not done. One or even two could even try. It's not an even try. Nope. I leave them cleaving. Why did you do it? I'ma screw kids and tease them and please them for the treason. That's the reason I'ma squeeze them, make them tell and make them dwell. They're not dead. I got lead, but I won't use it. I'll refuse it. Cause
yo, mood of scale 138.
You can say that.
No doubt, no hesitation. I saw you actually change that thing up, so it's all good. I'm glad to be here with my man. Bad News Ramen. Just better have my donuts on the ones and twos here, and coming off. I'm glad we're able to even though we had to push it back a couple days. I'm glad that we're able to podcast this week. You know, I will be leaving to the frozen tundra that is Minnesota next week. Yeah. So not gonna be able to podcast. But there was an actual Raw of consequence this week that. Glad that we're going to be able to talk about a little bit, and I'm actually, you know, I'm looking forward to this conversation because I don't know. I think, you know, obviously we're going to talk about the Daniel Bryan.
No, I don't know.
Obviously, for the people out there, we're gonna, the people.
I was thinking more of the Rikishi, the people.
Yeah.
I did it for Daniel Bryan. I did it for the people.
Well, we're going to talk about the retirement, and I think. You know, Daniel Bryan, he's become this, like, real darling of the WWE, and for, you know, rightfully so for a lot of reasons. But I think where a lot of people always just glow on and see, like never any kind of fault in anything he's ever done. You know, I think for the last couple of years, you know, we've given him credit for a lot of the really great stuff he's done. But I think we've also kind of tried to put it into perspective that every single little thing that he did was not, like, always the greatest. So, you know, I'm glad to, or I'm looking forward to hearing, like, your perspective on, like, you know, his career, what he accomplished. I mean, I think we can both agree, like, career aside, I mean, the whole, his retirement speech and the whole thing was really great. But I think after we talk about all of that, I think, you know, we can talk, maybe put him in some historical perspective and just kind of wrap up, our thoughts on this guy's career. So, and you want to talk about the speech first? I think we should talk about what's... I thought the speech was really nice.
No, I don't want to talk about the speech. No. Go ahead. No, like, I like it. Keep on talking.
No, I think it was really nice, really heartfelt. You know, and not to kind of... Okay, I'll bring up Cena real quick, right? Only to kind of...
Do we have to?
I will. Yeah, I will because, you know, and, you know, I understand he's the number one guy in everything and... But whenever I read something that he tweets or, like, he makes commentary, like, it really generally for me feels like, okay, he's saying what he's supposed to say or he's trying to be, like, that guy that leads the locker or whatever. I don't necessarily feel any... I can't tell. I'm sure some of the stuff he says is genuine, but to me, it always comes off as, like, very processed. And I think everything that Daniel Bryan said, like, all the emotions he had, like, totally heartfelt. When he says stuff like how he feels or why he does what he does. I really believe it, right? So, like, he's talking, like, you know, he's talking about the donating his hair to the kids, something that he really wants to do. Like, I totally buy that. Maybe I'm a mark for that, but I buy that the stuff that he says and the stuff that
you're a mark for someone telling the truth.
I'm saying maybe I'm a mark for believing that he is, but I think that he's a really genuine guy. And I thought, like, everything he said, the emotions he talked about, the reasons, everything. I have no doubt that he gave, like, the true, honest, like, no, nothing held back, like, reasonings and feelings that he had about the moment. And I applaud him for that because, like, that was probably, like, for emotionally as being a wrestling fan, like, that's...
Did you tear up?
I did not tear up, but...
I did.
Did you? So we can get into that later. Yeah. But for me, like...
I cried like a little bitch.
From the emotions that he gave, the last time I was kind of felt, like, moved in that way watching wrestling was the night where Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels buried the hatchet, where I really...
Which really seemed forced, right? I mean...
I didn't... That I felt...
I mean, yeah, but you know what I mean, right? I mean, not, like that. I mean, the contrarian in me felt I was forced, but I, with the extensive kind of, you know, background that I checked, did, and there goes my phone. The background check that I did, you know, before that, getting their DVD, Reveries DVD, you know, it wasn't, but it was. I guess I don't want to say it was forced, but it was more. I felt it was more symbolism driven than something that they wanted to do. I know they wanted to do it,
yeah,
and I think they did it backstage. You know,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'll buy that. Like that may not have been the actual first reconciliation between the two, but like I truly felt that like they wanted to put it past them, not like they were told to put it past them. And I felt that the stuff that they said to one another, and even when they did the Rivalries DVD interviews, I felt like they were being very honest about, you know, this is why I didn't like you, and this is why I felt. And even for Michaels to be able to come around and say, like, you know, some of the stuff was my fault, and this and that, I felt like that they were very honest about it. And I enjoyed that kind of, like, when the few times that they peel behind the curtain, but I don't feel that that it's like a fake peeling behind the curtain where they're trying to like have an agenda behind it. I felt like that was like just like the real emotions that the two guys had, and I felt that's what Brian Danielson was able to deliver on Monday night. Wasn't like someone telling him this is the points you need to hit. Mm-hmm. Felt like they just gave him a microphone. They said go out there, and then he did it. And I felt a big part of it too. I one thing. You know, we'll criticize WWE a lot for decisions they make and whatnot. Things like this, they usually handle really well. And, like, the deal to have him be able to do it in Seattle, I thought was really nice as well. So I just thought overall, like, it was a great job for WWE to let him, you know, give him the reign to do what he needed to do. And I thought he executed it perfectly.
So what are you asking me?
I didn't ask you anything, but you can go and pontificate.
I can pontificate?
Yeah.
I thought you were a journalist there, Bobby the Brain.
How about this? Your thoughts?
My thoughts? what are you thinking?
This is me being Cheryl Miller, sticking a microphone in your face right now. Your thoughts?
No, she never said your thoughts. What she would do, she would say like, so Daniel Bryan retired on Monday. Microphone. Yeah, and your point. I think... Here's the deal with us, and especially the deal with me, is that we don't buy into mass, I wouldn't say hysteria, but kind of what the masses think. I think me and you are two people that kind of can assess the situation and do it what it is. Daniel Bryan, I have known about him for a long time, and I was thinking about how when I first was kind of telling you about him, you weren't too enthralled with him. And I was kind of saying, like, well, this guy on the indie circuit and what he did in Japan, I'm like, this guy's definitely worth watching. And then you became a fan of him, and then I kind of soured on him a little bit.
Right.
And the thing, the speech, I mean, it was genuine and it was enthralling. I mean, I was, you know, if you want to go with the cliche, was I on the edge of my seat for that, for a speech? Yeah, I was. Because this is kind of, the last, I mean, he's not the last, but this was like, you know, they had two big indie stars in WWE, right? CM Punk and then Daniel Bryan. And I think both of those guys are interchangeable. And that's the highest compliment I can give Daniel Bryan, because I thought CM Punk was a wrestler of his era. He created a whole new era of wrestling. And Daniel Bryan was kind of the secondary figure for that. Kind of like along the same lines of, say, a Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. And I think, I mean, both at the height of both these guys' popularity, I don't think there was that big of a difference with them. I think Daniel Bryan was more marketable, which is funny unto itself. I mean, because he did bring up the point, you know, 5'8", 190 pounds. He shouldn't have been as big as he was. And the timing was right. He was able to capitalize on it. I thought him giving a shout-out to Kane was well deserved, because I think Kane really rocketed him to that level where he could be, where the WWE could see him as like a marketable person. And the biggest
shot to Regal too was nice.
Yeah. The biggest thing I can compare it to, and I was kind of thinking about, because he did bring up his dad, and it's the last time that his dad saw him wrestle, and you know, that really meant something to me because, you know, my uncle passed away a couple weeks, or like, you know, two, 3 months, well, you don't know, but two, 3 months ago, and I was left with the same feeling that I have with Daniel Bryan. I mean, no way is Daniel Bryan, you know, passed away or his life is over. I think he has a job with the WWE. I think he could be a great trainer. He could be a great ambassador. But I thought that I would have 5 or 6 more years of watching Daniel Bryan. And I'll be the first one to say I wasn't a big fan of his. I mean, I respected what he did, but I felt his matches were becoming redundant, and it was kind of just kind of being boring. But the thing is, I mean, he moved the crowd. And anybody that can create multiple chants while he's wrestling and be able to sustain that success where he gets that mainstream success but still keep his indie cred is very hard to do. And I feel cheated. You know, I feel cheated that I won't be able to see him be the main guy, because he was the main guy. He gets hurt. He becomes Intercontinental Champion. He gets hurt. And we don't see him wrestle anymore. I was very, you know, he says grateful and thankful. I was very thankful. I don't want to use the word grateful. I was very thankful that we saw him at WrestleMania. And I never saw CM Punk wrestle, and I kind of kicked myself for that. But I was able to say that I seen Daniel Bryan wrestle, and it's not like I'm going to put my grandkids on my knees and tell them. You know, it's not that, but I got to see one of the best performers of his generation wrestle. And all I got to say is that when Daniel Bryan, when he first got onto that scene where he was on fire, he had like a 2 month run where he would, the stuff like this guy, I'll compare it, like, you know, when Cesaro, when he, before he got hurt, how he was just, he had the crowd in his hand, he was just high energy the whole time. He learned that from Daniel Bryan. And Daniel Bryan for a while was just every move that he did, the way the crowd got into, you know, the way they chanted, where they did the oh, you know, with all the kicks and everything like that, with the yes, with the no, and then he just went nonstop. I mean, mm-hmm. He went 150% on top of the 200% he was already given. And I got to see that for like a 2 month span. And I was sitting there and being blown away by it.
And I think it was more like a 6 to 8 month run that he had.
But I'm saying when he first had it, when that first 2 months, and then to me it started, I'm not talking about his run, I'm just talking about something I never saw before. Mm-hmm. I've never seen, and I've seen them all, but I've never seen a wrestler.
You've seen them all over the world?
Yeah. And there's going to be a dead horse head in my bed later on. What's the matter with you? Godfather, be a man. But I saw, for like that 2 month span, where I was just blown away by him. And right after that, you had the Shield, where you're sitting there watching the Shield going like, what the hell? And then you had like the Usos, Cesaro. To me, he really defined and really created this archetype of wrestler where they just go 3,000% in the ring. They go nonstop. You can't catch your breath when you're watching this guy, because it's just move after move after move after move. And for that 2 month span, I was just blown away by it. Mm-hmm. And then you know, after that, it I kind of got tired of it because I don't feel he was progressing. It had nothing to do with him. I think, you know, you talk about, you know, WWE does a good job. Well, they did a bad job with him because they stifled him. I mean, they could have given him that belt after 3 months when he really got over. And I think he really could have taken off. And
I think,
yeah. I personally feel that maybe his career would have been extended maybe for one more year, because he didn't have to do all these crazy matches. You know, when you're the top guy, you don't have to try to, I mean, the pressure to steal the show and make a name for himself and say that he was better than everybody else, I don't think he has to do that as much. I think he can kind of slow it down a little bit, or not be in ladder matches.
Or even just be protected by the fact that, exactly, he doesn't have to wrestle like every single, yes, night at, yeah, that. Yeah, and I think, you know, like, I'll say this on this side of it. Like, as you mentioned, like, you feel like, you know, cheated in a certain way, but I'll say, and I'm pretty sure that you will agree, like, I'm glad that he retired, and not to say that I didn't want to watch him wrestle, but it's kind of one of the first thoughts I had when I know he's going to retire is, you know, it's so nice to see, like, from, you know, we're, you know, not to give too much away here, but we're about 40 years old. It's really nice for me and, you know, Bennett and Bad News Ramen over here to be able to see a guy that we like watch wrestling and enjoyed and had a great career be able to retire. Whereas we had, like, a run from our 20s, mostly in our, like, teens to early 30s, of all the wrestlers we grew up watching dying in, like, bad circumstance. And guys, like, we cared about and wanted to see them, like, do well. They didn't get to go out this way. They didn't get to go out on their terms because of the lifestyle that wrestling brings and all the other things go on. It's really nice to be able to see a guy that says, yeah, you know, as much as I still love this and I'd love to be able to do this, like, I got to think about, you know, my health and my family. And, you know, he's made the money. He can take care of them. And he'd be able to make a decision for himself and his health rather than be forced to continue to do this, even though he may know he shouldn't, but he really have no alternatives. Like, I feel like a lot of the wrestlers that we grew up watching, like, they were, you know, remained wrestling until their 50s or their 60s, if they even made it that far, because they had nothing else that they could do. And I'm glad that he's able to go with as much health as he can and be comfortable with that decision. And I'd rather that happen than he tries to come back, he forces it, and then he hurts his neck, and then I got to see this guy paralyzed. And I think that's also, I think, credit to WWE. It's like, if you're reading a lot of the stuff that I've been reading on, like, this whole situation, it's like a couple doctors did clear him, but the WWE doctors was the one that kept on not doing it. And I think that all the money would say they should clear him and let him wrestle, but I think they didn't want to have, like, the blood on their hands, so to speak, of saying, yeah, we cleared him when we knew his neck wasn't right, and then he got hurt, and then, like, there's probably a backlash against WWE where, like, why did you let him do this when you knew, like, you know, what his physical situation was? So, you know, I'd much rather get to see him go out like this, where I can have all the good memories of what I saw him do in the ring, rather than have to be like, damn, dude, like, I, it hurts me seeing this guy, like, in a wheelchair or, you know, any other possible bad outcome that there could have been.
And not only that, but then he also can get the treatment that he needs, because, I mean, concussions are no joke. And me and you, you talk about us being 40 years old. We come from an era where I've probably had maybe 4 or 5 concussions in my life. And a lot of that had to do with soccer. And I didn't realize at the time that I had concussions. And I'm not talking when I'm, like, you know, 18, 20 years old. I'm talking 9 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old. I mean, I took some big hits. And to tell you the truth, I mean, there's certain times right now with me that I can't remember stuff. You know, I'm not trying to say, like, you know, I'm really into, like, NFL or whatever it is. But, I mean, there's sometimes, like, I'll, you know, I can't think of the name. And maybe it's because I'm getting old. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
I think it's because you're old, but...
No, but you know what I mean. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it's some of that, but I generally believe... I mean, I had a concussion when I got in a car accident. I had a concussion then, mm-hmm. where for, like, 3 months, it was, like, affecting me for, like, 3 months. And it's just kind of, you know, if you think about this guy, he said, I had concussions here, but he's probably had 20, 25, 30 concussions. And, It's funny. It's not funny, but it's an eye opener, because he comes from the same generation where you shake it off and you man up and you go out there the next day. I mean, that's the way athletes are built. And there was a time where me and you were built that way as well. And I'm just glad that he's able to go out on his own terms, and it's not a joke. And I hope that, you know, the good thing about the WWE is that they pay for all the protocol. They take care of people that aren't under contract because of what they've done. And we always talk about what WWE does that it's bad, but this is the one thing where WWE's been a leader in a lot of things. Social media, streaming TV. They've been a leader in a lot of stuff, and I think if you really look at their model of what they do in terms of concussions, in terms of aftercare, in terms of drug abuse, and still taking care of these wrestlers that need it, and not only that, but like even like their wellness program, right? Like I remember there'd be a couple times where like, oh, this guy's like, he's out because of the wellness program. And we're like, man, screw the wellness program, because we're used to like the NFL one, and the NFL one's a joke.
Right.
Well, this one isn't a joke, and you're talking about guys that are that can get that should have major pushes, like Randy Orton's like one of them, and then they make the decision to hold him out because he failed the wellness program. So you have all that wrapped into one, and then you have Daniel Bryan, and it's kind of a thing where they're showing kind of the vignettes of the stuff that he's done, and you forget what he did. And I just remember watching anything going on again, and knowing that he had probably a better career in Japan. And I mean, because he's huge in Japan. I mean, he's like the one of the, like you talk about Gaijin wrestlers, he's one of the top Gaijin wrestlers over there of all time. Well, a huge amount of respect even before he got into the WWE, right. And he's had a great career. But if the WWE played him right, he would have had an even better career.
Yeah,
and I think they realized that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of I didn't get to like part of the point of what I was trying to say, but and we were saying it in real time when it was happening here, was you're wasting your time like keeping this guy on the chase, and then you finally decide to give him the belt, and then he doesn't get the run. I think that's the biggest, like, if we're gonna say, to use your words, like you felt cheated. I think that was where I felt cheated the most, was that when he had the time where he was hot as all hell and he should have been the champion, they wasted like 4 to 6 months of it having him chase Randy Orton, and then when he finally got the belt, then that's when the injuries all struck. And it's like, you know, we could have had like a 6 to 8 months of him, you know, getting this good championship run when we only got like two, and then it got cut off because of injuries. So I think if anything was cheated, it's the amount of time that he would have had with the belt. I think they always thought in the back of their mind, well, you know, he's a young guy, and we'll always be able to give him the belt and give him the run. And then he got hurt, and then the time never comes for it. So I think that's, if anything, was cheated. I think of the time of him having that real good championship run was cheated out of, but it doesn't diminish his career. Like, his career speaks for itself.
Well, I agree with you, but at the same time, let's put it in perspective. They were giving him the slow play, and the slow play worked really well. And then he got hurt. So, I mean,
I'll disagree a little bit. The slow play worked well for a period of time, but then I think they missed the boat with it, and they went overboard with the slow play because it got stale. Remember when he beat Cena that night, and it was ridiculously hot, and then the next night they stripped him and they gave it to Randy Orton. That worked for a little bit, but when it extended out into a couple of months,
That was like SummerSlam. They didn't strip it the next night. He lost it to Randy Orton.
I don't know.
He lost it to Randy Orton.
They stripped him.
Okay.
They stripped him and gave it to Orton.
No, it was SummerSlam where he beat Cena,
then they stripped him immediately.
Then Triple H went to shake his hand, gave him the pedigree, and then Randy Orton.
Oh, and then he Money in the Bank, yeah. And then he came back and he beat Orton.
Yeah.
And then they stripped him.
And then they stripped him. Yeah.
Okay. And then, you know, if they were going to do an angle like that for a couple of weeks, a month, and he gets the belt, and then he can continue the heat, but they drug it out for like 3 or 4 months, where it was like, I didn't even care anymore. Right, and then he got the belt, and then like the intense fire of what that run could have been had already burned, and then a lot of people latched on because they're supposed to, but they really missed the good opportunity. I feel there is what I'm saying, but regardless, I don't think it diminishes like his career and the stuff that he achieved, because I think what you said is right. You know, like him and CM Punk really like started like a new era and like a new way that WWE looks for stars right now. Like back then, they were like, if you had a big name on the indie scene, that was a detriment to WWE bringing you in. And now it's to the point where they're looking to get any talented indie guy they can. And Punk and Daniel Bryan had a lot, and Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose.
Well, you don't have Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, or even, I mean, not Roman Reigns will be Roman Reigns, but you don't have Seth Rollins, you don't have Dean Ambrose without CM Punk or Daniel Bryan. And I'd probably say you really don't have Seth Rollins without Daniel Bryan. And I think those guys' success is really hinged not so much on CM Punk, but Daniel Bryan, because Daniel Bryan knew how to play the game. And he knew when to hold it. And I never really saw him as a guy that the WWE was afraid of. I mean, and I'm not saying that they controlled him, but he towed the line, and he was a model employee for them. And I think he took, you know, it's like with CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, like Daniel Bryan's on one shoulder and he's all dressed in white, and then CM Punk is in red and you know,
like the devil
two
horns.
The two consciences, right? And actually CM Punk did have the devil horns for that one poster, but you know, he was a big ambassador for the indie guys that you see now. And I think I don't want to get all crazy, I don't want to get all Michael Cole on you, but I think, you know, for some part, I think, you know, there were indie wrestlers that are part of the WWE now that looked at what the success of what Daniel Bryan did and said, you know, I can do the same thing, and I don't have to be a big bulked up guy. I just need to know how to work in the ring.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've been talking here in the last few minutes, and CM Punk has been brought up quite a bit. So there's something that kind of struck me during Daniel Bryan's speech, and kind of the juxtaposition of how people look at Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. And, like, you know, Daniel Bryan was talking about how, like he wanted to make clear that, you know, the wrestlers do this because they love it, and, you know, they basically said, like, you know, you fans don't owe us anything, and we don't owe you anything, right, when we step away. And I think that was very well said. But then I look and ultimately, and like basically, like CM Punk has almost basically said and the same thing, and like this guy gets like vilified like all day long on social media. He essentially not as bad as you know like concussions and stuff, though. You know, I'm sure CM Punk has had several. You know, he stepped away because, you know, he didn't like the direction things were going, but he also had a bunch of health issues going away. And people turn around at him and say, you know, you abandoned us, you walked out on us, you know, you took your ball and went home. And I don't quite understand why. I mean, I know it's like the way that the whole thing's played, but I don't really see CM Punk leaving as that much different than Daniel Bryan leaving. I think both of them gave like everything they had to the business. And if they got to the point where they didn't think that it was best for their physical faculties going forward, and they were done, I think they both step away, and I think neither one of them owe the fans any more than they gave all they could have given, and nobody owes them either. I mean, if you want to be done with CM Punk or whatever, but you don't have to like attack this guy and treat him like he's some villain. I mean, he essentially did the exact same thing as Daniel Bryan did in my eyes. I don't know if you feel the same way, or is it a little bit different because CM Punk crossed the line many times. He didn't handle things quite as well as Bryan politically. What do you think about that?
I think with CM Punk, the way I see it is, I remember one time, you know, you worked for this company, and you were telling me all the things that were all the wrong things they were doing, and how they were taking advantage of their workers and stuff. And I think I said something to the effect of like, yeah, you know, I wish I was, you know, there to kind of say what I needed to be said. And you said, no, you know, it wouldn't work. I'm like, you wouldn't be there. You'd be fired. And I think with CM Punk, I think CM Punk leaving really opened their eyes to a lot of things. Both of them were used the same way. I mean, they were the workhorses, and they did the jobs for everybody. And I think CM Punk did more so than Daniel Bryan did. Because CM Punk was hotter at that time, and I think they learned their lesson with CM Punk, with everything that came out with the show that he did with Colt Cabana, and I think they really listened to it. And the thing with CM Punk was that he had something that it can't be seen, right? I mean, Daniel Bryan, he had multiple concussions. You can look at the scans and. With especially like, you know, concussions are, they're like the new hot topic, right? I mean, they're the things that it pushes the needle. CM Punk had a staph infection. You can't see a staph infection. And or it was some type of infection.
Well,
it
was staph infection, yeah. But and so that's like a really bad. But you can see that.
I mean, you can see that, but you had a doctor saying allegedly that it wasn't anything, and then they just kept on giving them whatever drugs,
Z-Pax.
Yeah. So you know, so it was something that you know. I think staph infections can be just as dangerous as concussions over the long term, where you could die a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot of protocol for that. With concussions, there are, and I think if you add the fact that CM Punk, the way that fans see it was that the fans see it is like, you know, CM Punk was given whatever he wanted in the WWE. He could say whatever the hell he wanted to say, and he has all this power. And he you say CM Punk that you want to change the business and change it for the better, but then you turn around and leave. Well, the whole thing is that there's a lot of things that go unsaid there, and there's a lot of, you know, we talk about the glass ceiling with John Cena all the time. Well, that's what he was fighting, and when you're vocal like that, and when you challenge someone like that, and you put, I mean, the whole thing with the WWE Network, right? He was the only guy that says, "Hey, well, so what happens to our payouts? Because now we're losing all our payouts for the pay per views." And instead of you're looking at a company going like, you know what, like we can be the leader in a streaming service, and we can make. The potential to make money is totally different. We can change our business structure. We don't have to rely on the pay-per-views and make money on house shows. That something that's quantified, right? Like you make money on your house shows. You make money on Raw. You make money with your gates, right? It can be gate related. It doesn't have to be pay-per-view related anymore. Now it's gate related. And with the pay-per-views, we're losing money because people are illegally streaming our stuff. So a third of the people that watch it aren't watching it. Now we can take care of that. And provide and make something where people are going to buy it because it's such a low price. And then you have a guy going like, "Oh, well, wait a minute! Like, what about my money? You know, what about the money that I've been making? And how are you going to compensate that?" Well, I mean, that creates waves, and they never addressed it. WWE never addressed it. They've been addressing Daniel Bryan the whole time, and you add that to the fact that when you deal with a concussion, your ears perk up. With a staph infection, you don't even know what the hell a staph infection is. And it was never brought out. WWE never made a statement that he had a staph infection, that he's been going through all this stuff. Then you throw in the drug testing that he had to face, which was more like a slap in his face than anything else. And his classic line was like, Triple H wanted him to do a drug test. And he tells Triple H, he's like, "Well, why don't you do a drug test?" Mm-hmm. You know, and you look at Triple H and you're like, "Yeah, why don't you do a drug test?" Mm-hmm. So you have all that stuff, and it's the constant fighting that you do. He was fighting for a cause that he believed in, and it's a cause that I believe in as well. But it's not a popular cause, and the people that create that environment where it's like, "Well, wait a minute, you know, I'm going to go against authority, not because I can't handle authority, but this is wrong." And he ended up and left, and right to the end, he did something that I did a year before, like my job. You know, like I was full time, and then they wanted to cut everybody down to part time, and like, okay, you guys are all part time, you guys are all treated the same, but what they wanted to do to me is that they gave me more work to do because of where I live, and I said, "No, wait, that doesn't work, right?" And I started questioning, and my poor brother, the producer, was my boss, and I finally ended up saying, like, "You know what, it's time for me to leave because I'm putting you in a bad position, and we're brothers, I'm putting you in a bad position. It's time for me to go." Mm-hmm. But I wasn't rebelling. I was rebelling because it was wrong. What they were doing was wrong, and it was wrong for the company. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I could make more money for the company if they allowed me to do this. And I tried everything I could to stay with that company because I loved that company. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of the whole thing, right?
Right.
And you know, there's a breaking point, and I think, you know, I brought up the company that you worked with before, and things happened there, and everything that I feared that would happen with you for this company, it happened, and you know,
and it came out all the better for it.
That's what I'm saying.
But and I think everything you're saying, like, I mean, I think that's a good parallel. The big difference is, you know, all the people that, you know, you would deal with in your job didn't turn around and say, "Oh, that bad news ramen, that guy's a punk ass because he left us high and dry." And that's the thing. Like, I have no problem. I would love to see CM Punk be wrestling. And I'm not trying to turn this Daniel Bryan and try to turn it into a CM Punk thing.
I don't think you can talk about Daniel Bryan and look back at his career with the WWE
without talking about
CM Punk.
Yeah, and I would love to see CM Punk still be wrestling and everything, but you know what? He entertained me for the years he was there. I didn't even like the guy when I first saw him. He made me a big fan. And when he walked away, I understand why he did. And I got no ill feelings towards what he did was right for him. And the WWE moved on. I don't think it's a better product for it, but you know, it is what it is. But there's no need to, like, I just don't see why people feel like they need to go after and attack him for basically doing the same thing that they're all praising. We're all praising Daniel Bryan for,
because CM Punk wears that on his sleeve, right? Mm-hmm. He wears his 100% no frill attitude on his sleeve. Daniel Bryan does the exact same thing, but Daniel Bryan is more he plays the game better, mm-hmm. and if he keeps everything behind the scenes, and he changed WWE just as much as CM Punk did. He did it in a more amicable way, and I can't fault either guy for it. Like, when CM Punk left, I was like, you know, dude, I applauded him, right? And I was pissed off. I stopped watching wrestling for a while, and I came back and watched it because wrestling does go on. And Daniel Bryan, is he better for doing it? I don't know if he is, but they were. What I can say about both of them, because we never really kind of put a. We talked about CM Punk, but he didn't get his chance to say goodbye. And that's like the whole thing. Like, and even when I'm watching, you know, when I'm watching Daniel Bryan, like, I wanted him to say something about CM Punk, because I think both of those guys really made their mark and really changed the company for the better. I'm just going, like, you know, like, okay, it's one way to be like CM Punk and really stand by what you believe, which is really what I've done for the majority of my life, where I get in people's faces and tell them like it is, and people that I get paid for. And it's funny, like, the company that I was working at before didn't appreciate that. Well, the company that I work with now, they know how I am, and I got some major clients, and they asked about certain things that they sell, and I said, well, this is why it doesn't work. And I said, let me be honest. It's kind of like a joke now, even like with the main, like, our biggest client that we have. And so they asked a question about something, and I told them exactly what was wrong with it. I told them what was good about it. I said, but here's your major problems. And they're like, well, at least you're... And so the person was like, well, can you be honest? You know, because I hammered it. And it's funny, like, the other guy that works in our company is just as good as I am. A lot more positive. And you have that balance, right? Mm-hmm. And if the WWE was as good of a company that it could have been, it could have taken those two forces and created this monster product that there was. And it really speaks, and I'm not trying to talk about CM Punk. I think it really speaks for what Daniel Bryan was able to accomplish, that CM Punk made it better in his own way. Daniel Bryan, I think, took the reins after that and really skyrocketed it, and it where it lessened the blow of losing such a major star like that. And because of what both of those guys did, when Daniel Bryan stepped away because of health reasons, even before he retired, the company was better for it. I mean, they didn't miss a beat. And I think that has a lot to do with what the changes that Daniel Bryan did, where it wasn't just John Cena driven. You have, like, this secondary guy who's probably better than John Cena. Actually was. Now I'm being like AJ Styles, right? Well, I know he... I'm not saying he's the best, because
I'm Daniel,
yeah. But stop. But it didn't miss a beat. And I think a lot of that had to do with the influence that Daniel Bryan had, not only as a worker, but what he did in the ring and how he moved the crowd with that.
Ice my back. So, I mean, that's pretty close to it for me. Yeah. Is there anything else about Daniel Bryan that you had?
No. What I wanted to say, now that we're talking about a certain Styles-Clash guy.
Is that the guy to...
Just, I mean, what I want to say is that I know I've been negative in the past with Daniel Bryan and his matches, but I was never negative about him as a performer. And the only reason why is because I felt he was better than what he was doing. And I felt that he was being held back by WWE by not allowing him to have different type of matches. And when he did, especially that match that he had with Bray Wyatt, I mean, he won Match of the Year in our Moody's, you know, Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan was one of the best matches I've ever seen. And it wasn't because he didn't put he put Bray Wyatt over, but he didn't put him over. It was like that was a New Japan match, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's like a New Japan match before I saw a New Japan match. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, it's all I can say is that I think I speak for a lot of people, and I think I speak for you. I thought I had a couple more years to really enjoy his matches, and I feel cheated that I won't be able to do it, but Godspeed, man, you know?
Yeah. I'd rather that, like I said, we'd rather have it end that way than end more tragically like some other guys that we were fans of, you know.
So let's segue right now, and let's talk about the power of the WWE. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I am quickly becoming a mark for AJ Styles. I feel the way that they played this guy. I listened to Chris Jericho's podcast with AJ Styles, mm-hmm. and you know, here's the same thing. Like, I think you were an AJ fan before I was in TNA, but here's the thing. You had a lot more respect for him of what he could do. You weren't a mark for him.
There you go.
But you respected what he did. And I kind of did too. And it's just kind of a case where it's the problem that I had with AJ Styles when he was in TNA was just like, you know what? He's a high spot guy. You know, he's a high spot artist. And he doesn't know how to work a match yet. And watching him in New Japan, I was like, AJ Styles. But then I started watching his matches in New Japan and going like, you know, this guy can work. Mm-hmm. And then he comes in the right way. He has a really good sense of what the business is about. I think they've played him very well. I think it really shows the shift in what Chris Jericho has become in this company. And this is the first time that Chris Jericho, because I felt that Chris Jericho and CM Punk, while it was a good rivalry, I really felt it was forced because Jericho was just, what Jericho did was entertaining, but you know, you knew Jericho was trying to be like the straight monster heel, and it really didn't. Jericho's better than that, right? I mean, Jericho, you look at like Jericho in WCW when he was doing like the 1001 moves and stuff. The stuff he did there worked really well because he was young. Now he was older, and he was trying to find his way. I think Jericho was trying to find, and I think he's the first to admit that he has to reacclimate himself to everything that it was. I felt that rivalry could have been better. I think what Jericho is doing now with AJ Styles, where Jericho is taking all the heat, he is driving the rivalry, and he allows AJ Styles to shine in the ring. Because you're right, I did look back at that first match, and there were some messy spots there.
Right.
And I think that has more to do with just, you know, AJ has to learn the style. Yeah. But I really think that why I like AJ Styles right now is not so much what he's doing in the ring, but it's the way WWE is treating him, and I think Jericho has found new life with AJ Styles, and I think that's what a wrestler's supposed to do. And it's that machine, you know, it's that machine where you can put someone in WWE if you play it right. You can make we talk about Daniel Bryan. You can make a big star into a huge star, and I think the sky's the limit with this guy. And I'm gonna let you finish.
All right, Kanye.
I'm gonna let you finish. And then when April first comes around with Dallas, Texas for NXT, when Nakamura makes his debut, Nakamura can speak English, by the way. So I just these two guys coming in. I'm glad that I can watch some AJ Styles matches, and then right around the time that I think he's gonna get in his kind of forte of him being a WWE performer, Nakamura's coming in NXT. It's gonna be great, man. I mean, I'm hyped up for both these guys.
You're glad that you bought that WWE Network membership so you can watch Nakamura weekly.
Yeah.
Nice. So just to add on to that, you know, I agree. I'll amend some things that you said about my AJ Styles fandom. I was never like a huge fan of the guy, even
never
in TNA.
Never
convicted on no dope. But I did like his matches. The problem that I felt he had in TNA, you know, I didn't have a problem with him being a high spot guy. There was some of that, but he's good technically. He's always been good technically. Being the fact that TNA was trying to force this guy as like their quote, I'm air quoting here, their Sting, their flagship guy, forced him into this spot where he's supposed to be the number one guy and forced him to cut a lot of promos.
And especially when he's getting outperformed by like Samoa Joe and Christopher Daniels. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah. But he's right in there with those guys.
You know
work
what I mean,
wise, yeah. It's just on the mic, he's just bad. And in New Japan, you know, his ring work got better, and a lot of it probably has to do with the guys he's working with. But him talking was not so big a part of the program. And back to what you're saying of WWE's playing this guy the right way. They absolutely playing this guy the right way. The way they surprise entrance in the Rumble. He has a good run in there, but gets eliminated. But he goes out looking good, like, you know, leaves something there for maybe him and Kevin Owens down the road. And then he comes out, beats Jericho. And then the way, like, I'm going to give Miz some credit, right?
Because
that SmackDown, Miz TV, where he brought AJ out and just basically shunned him and wouldn't let him talk. Like, Miz put him over in a big way. But and it's like a backhanded compliment, possibly, but it was really smart for the WWE to get AJ that exposure without having him talk. Because the more he talks, then he starts kind of sounding like a bumpkin sometimes. But they played that, and then they're spinning it forward with the way Jericho is able to carry this feud on the mic.
Well, let's talk about the Miz real fast, okay. Because I enjoyed the Miz match that he had on SmackDown.
Right. The match was good, too.
And that's kind of like the other thing, too, is AJ, I think, is one of those guys that, because you look at like AJ Styles versus Tanahashi, right? I have no interest in Tanahashi whatsoever, but they put on a great match. AJ Styles versus Okada, great match. I can't wait to see AJ Styles versus Nakamura. It was the last match that I think both of them had in that company. You take a guy like The Miz who is really... It's funny because you look at him in 2009 or whatever it was. He had the double belts. I mean, he was like the main event. And then he just kind of went by the wayside. They tried to make him like the top... Like a secondary top face, and that never worked. I'm not a fan of The Miz by any means. But his first... You know, because he faced Kevin Owens... Who faced Kevin Owens in the pay-per-view where it was... A 10 count match.
Ambrose.
Okay, so I apologize. But so his first two guys is AJ Styles faces is Chris Jericho. Good solid match. But I really think that Miz really did the job for AJ Styles in that match. Because Miz is limited, but I think AJ gave him a rub too. I think they had a very good textbook WWE match.
I was really skeptical of that match. Because remember, like what I said is I thought Jericho was the perfect guy to have AJ's first match with. And then you turn around and put him against The Miz, who is not the greatest worker. So I thought Miz really, he was really great that SmackDown. Like his Miz TV put AJ over very well. And then the match was not a dud. The match was actually really good. And it wasn't all AJ. Like Miz played his part in that match too. So yeah, good props to The Miz on that. And then now they're kind of going back to AJ Styles versus Jericho. And like I watched just a little bit of SmackDown tonight before I came over. I don't know if you've seen any of it, but it was the way they're playing it is really good also. So yeah, I'm very interested in that feud. Just quickly, kind of as we dovetail this one, do you think that AJ Styles has that potential of fill the Daniel Bryan void at all?
I think it's two different. I think it's two different wrestlers.
Because when Daniel Bryan came in, we had no question about his in-ring ability, but his mic skills were bad, and he got a lot better as his time went on. I don't know that AJ has that in him, but is it potentially out there?
I think Daniel Bryan had the whole underdog thing going. I think Daniel Bryan transformed himself because. Until he got that beard, he was really kind of hard to take seriously because he just looked like this little kid, not the greatest looking guy. But you know, then you kind of get the Grizzly Adams effect going. If you don't know who Grizzly Adams is, look that up. And Daniel Bryan was able to transform himself, and then the people got behind him, and then I think that enabled him to become a really good promo. He wasn't a great promo, and to tell you the truth, like you talking about a speech, it wasn't the greatest speech in the world, but it was heartfelt. And that's what made it work. And that's when Daniel Bryan was at his best. I don't think AJ has had the freedom to really find out who he is on the mic, even in TNA, because they try to have Flair be his mouthpiece for a while. I think with in New Japan with the Bullet Club, you have Carl Anderson being the mouthpiece, and he always came across being really stupid, like he was trying to be something that he wasn't. I think here WWE doesn't have a great track record because they have a goldmine in Roman Reigns, but they try to make him they try to make him talk and carry promos, and he's not supposed to be that guy. He's supposed to be the really quiet guy that all he has to say is like believe in the Shield, and that's his promo. And I think that would go really far with him, but they messed that up. If they want him to be in the mold of a John Cena, he's going to fall flat on his face. If they want him to get an organic type following and see where he can go as a character along the lines of a Daniel Bryan, because people forget when Daniel Bryan really took off, they tried putting him in that role a little bit where he started to cut these promos and it didn't work. And it wasn't until he got comfortable and they allowed him, he was so over that we allowed him to get comfortable on the mic where he started cutting decent promos. He wasn't a great promo. He cut a decent promo. He moved the story along. If AJ Styles fits that mold, if he follows that path, I think he'll be okay. The thing I think he has against him is his southern drawl doesn't work for him, and his look. I mean, he kind of looks. There's just something about him, right? I mean, the beard kind of works, but he looks like a bum. I mean, he looks like a bumpkin, right? He looks like some back Billy Hicks somewhere. And I don't mean that. You know, I mean that in a bad way, but it's a natural response, and I think there's other people that have that response as well. I think if you allow him to really put on a show and give the WWE audience something they've never seen before, which is a New Japan style match, I think he's fine, and I think he can do anything that he wants to do. If you're going to make him do a WWE match, I think you're limiting him, and it's going to be very interesting to see how AJ Styles translates in WWE, and especially how Nakamura translates. Because even when he's talking to Jericho, he's like, well, I really don't know about Nakamura. He's like, listen, like, is he like this guy? And he's like, no, he's like, he's his own guy. He's his own original guy. He's like, the only person he steals from is like Michael Jackson, and he gets that over as well too. So I think AJ, as part of the Bullet Club, really reinvented himself. It wasn't because of what he did on the mic, but it was the matches that he put on, and I really became a fan of his matches. So it's going to be interesting to see, can he fill the Daniel Bryan void? Nobody can, and that's the highest compliment I can give. Nobody can fill Daniel Bryan's shoes, just like nobody can fill CM Punk's shoes. Can they step in the general area, and can he get the general feeling of the way Daniel Bryan was, and kind of get the rub off of what it is by his performances? I think he can. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he'll be able to fill his shoes. But I think if you combine him with Seth Rollins, if you combine him with Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Nakamura,
Finn Balor,
Anderson, Samoa Joe, God. I mean, if they allow these guys to take off, this is a transitional period. WWE has done so well over the past 4 or 5 months that it doesn't seem like it's a transitional period, but they're in a major transitional period right now. And it's going to be really interesting to see how all these 8 to 10 guys that you can look at and count on. And not only that, but we're not even talking about the NXT guys that are there right now. You still have those two satin-wearing jacket tag team guys that are awesome. You have the two other guys.
Gable and Jordan.
And then you have Enzo
Cass.
Yeah, so it's crazy right now. And then not only that, but then now you have Sasha Banks just like still in the show. Mm. You know, I mean, I fast forward a lot of Raw, but I watched
the intro.
I watched the intro. Oh hell yeah, God, I love that intro. But I watched what Sasha Banks did. I watched the New Day. And it's very interesting right now, and you're slowly starting to see Raw transitioning to an NXT type product where everybody can stand on their own segments. There wasn't really any bad segments on the last Raw, and that's even with the Social Outcast. You know, that was a fine segment. Even the Goldust and
R-Truth
segments. Do you like those are working?
You like Goldust going back to old Goldust?
Oh yeah,
it's pretty good.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'm AJ Styles. I never thought I would say it, but I'm invested in this guy, and I want to see what happens.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, and I mean, I think I voiced my skepticism as being the least interesting of all those guys that came over from New Japan. He's one of the more, he's one of the segments that I look forward to on whether it's Raw or SmackDown. And like I said, I watched maybe the first 40 minutes of SmackDown before I came over here tonight. He was in the first segment. It was good. And then he's going to be again in a segment later. And I was, I can't wait to go home and watch what happens in the second part of it. All right, I'm gonna ask you a question, and if you haven't, if you have no opinion on, of it, then we can just move forward, okay? But so
you don't think I'll have an opinion on something?
Well, I don't know if you've looked into it at all, so yeah. I don't know. So I mentioned, cause we talked the other day, like when we pushed the show back, about things we might discuss, and then I brought up to you the whole thing about Titus getting suspended. So did you look into or
read? I didn't look into it, but
do you have an opinion on it?
I have a. Why don't you tell me what the story is, and I'll have it.
All right, so the story goes, and you can see it on, like, you know, Instagram or Vine or any of the Twitter, like, quote, dirt sheet accounts, where on the way up the ramp after the Daniel Bryan retirement, like, kind of Titus kind of reached out and, like, kind of tugged on the arm of Vince McMahon, and then he kind of, McMahon turned around, and it was, like, a quick exchange, and then they walked off. So pretty much everyone is like describing it as like a playful, maybe like he, like Titus was trying to rib McMahon or something like this. Like, didn't it really seem that he grabbed him in an aggressive way, like he was trying to fight him or anything, but kind of yanked on his arm. And because of that, he's been suspended for 90 days, or some are saying the sentence has been reduced to 60 days. But either way, Titus is suspended for making physical contact with Vince McMahon on that. So, I don't know. I really, honestly, I mean, I guess I have a little bit of an opinion on it, but do you have? Well, I'll say what I think. Okay, you can't just go grabbing the boss, I guess.
You can't goose the boss.
Yeah, but like, it doesn't seem like there was anything malicious, so I can understand where, as a point, it's like, you know, in any regular pro sport, you know, you don't put your hands on a referee. And even if there's not any, like, malice, like, there has to be some kind of punishment. To me, 90 days seems a little bit excessive, unless there's something else that was going on that we don't know about. 60 days even seems a little excessive, but I don't know what the right answer is as far as punishment. Yeah, probably something should be happened so people know they can't lay hands on the boss, but, like, it seems kind of extreme to me.
I'm going to disagree 100%. I think if you make a public display, not only in front of the boys, but also in front of the 60 or 70,000, whoever, how many people, fans are in attendance, McMahon is, McMahon's very complex to say the least, right? And when I first heard about it, I was like, you know what? I'm like, that's something that like Shawn Michaels would have done, and he probably would have been awarded for it. But I even disagree with that statement, because we used to say, like, you know, you talk about all the major guys that weren't getting their fair shake in the beginning of WWE, and then they talked to Vince McMahon one-on-one with nobody there, and McMahon's like, that's what I want from you. So you're ready now. I think Titus was trying to do that, but he did it in the wrong form. I think if, you know, because I think Titus has a lot to offer. I think maybe Titus was promised a lot of things, maybe, if I can read into stuff that I had no clue about. This is just my take on it. I don't think Titus is a malicious person. I don't think it was malicious in any way, but I think it could be construed as a message for something. But you don't do that. You don't do that with other people around, right? Like, there's things that, there's, you know, and here I go drawing on myself again, but I challenged one of my bosses in front, you know, and it was like, it was funny because it was like a group of like 10 people or whatever. And he's like, it was under the pretense of like, okay, tell us what you think is wrong or what can we do better as a company, right? And so I said my piece, and it was, the funny thing was that there was a woman that said something, and she was an attractive woman. And so, you know, he was open to her criticism, and they were kind of arguing a little bit. And so, and I just dropped the bomb, right? I said, I, you know, I think there's a glass ceiling for minorities here, and, or for young people or people that, come, you know, that aren't produced by you guys. And like, I was an outsider coming in,
anime. I got ripped. I mean, I just got ripped a flipping new one where the whole company knew within like 5 minutes after the meeting. And the whole thing was that I wasn't even fighting my fight. I was fighting for someone else. Because I was saying, hey, what are you going to say? He's like, well, you know, and the guy just backed down and didn't back me up when he was supposed to back me up. and I think that's really kind of what, you know, I think, because, you know, and my boss is a complex guy. And the whole thing, to my boss's credit, when the company folded, someone called him and said, hey, we need some good journalists and stuff. Like, give me a list of people that you think. And I was one of the guys on. I was one of the guys on top of the list. So very complex, right? I mean, very, you know, very supportive, but very highly critical. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the way Vince McMahon is. But you don't challenge him. You know, you can take anything as a challenge. And him being the public face of a multi-million dollar company, and to be slighted in any way in public, I think McMahon had every right to do what he did. I think 90 days is excessive. I think it's more of a case where you slap him on the wrist and just say, you know, because McMahon's so well respected within that company, saying, hey, you know, this is what happened. Don't the way I would approach it is like, you know, tie us to this. I said, if any of you motherfuckers do that to me, I will fuck you guys up too. And I'm sorry I'm cussing, but I think that's the message that can be sent. But he can't say that because, you know, he's a very public figure, not only in WWE, but, you know, across the board as a major international...
He's a very important man.
Money maker,
as you can tell.
But that's what I think it is.
So basically, you started off by saying that you disagree with me, and then in the end, we agree.
No. I said
I agreed that he should be punished, but I thought it was excessive.
90 days is excessive. That's all I think it's petty. I think it's very petty. But at the same time, I see why... Vince McMahon did it, and I agree. I'd rather back him up than anything else.
Okay, fair enough. Good job.
Well, thanks. Mm-hmm. Pat on the back. There we go. So let's wrap this up. But I don't have a rivalry thing right now, but I do want to put someone in the Hall of Kayfabe, and this one is going to be a stretch for you, but I think the name value, you can comment on this guy. One of the bloodiest, biggest, baddest heels in wrestling, and he was a freak show, scary as all hell, and played the bloody. I mean, you talk about like a bloody heel. He was an archetype for it, and I want to get your thoughts on one Abdullah the Butcher. And whether...
We already put him in.
Ah, screw it.
I thought that's where you're going, but it's like maybe there's somebody else that he's talking about.
Maybe there's another bloody... Yeah. We put a Bill the Butcher in, huh?
Well, we did.
There that goes. They're like, well, screw it.
You big tease.
Come on. Okay, right. let's put someone else in then. See, I can roll with the punches.
Okay.
So you talk about like bloody heels. Well, this was like one of the most effeminate heels around. And maybe we put this guy in too. I don't know. We probably did.
I don't think we did. I think I remember we talked about him one time. Yeah. But
pranced around the ring. Read a lot of poetry. Had some frisbee throwing and stuff. Oh.
He might be in too. I think he is. I thought you were going... The Adonis is the direction I thought you were about to go.
We haven't put Adrian Adonis in?
I don't think we... I remember we talked about him, but I don't think we ever actually inducted the man.
I don't know if we have enough... he was on a Golden Mic, I think, one time.
Right. So I know we discussed him one time, but he was never inducted.
I don't know enough about Adrian Adonis to put him in. So I don't know if...
Maybe the hall has to stay closed for another 2 weeks.
For another day.
This is too prestigious to start like throwing people around.
Hey, let's put this guy in.
This is a well thought out thing. So
is it well thought out?
Sure,
Dan.
Sure.
Here, let's see if I can. Do I have anybody? Could we put Dino Bravo in? I'm trying to fix some dead air here. Yeah, and there's not really anybody. I don't think there's really anybody that we can put in, and we'll leave it at that.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll table that.
We'll table that discussion for some other time.
2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah. You have a good time over there, over there, over there, and we'll go from there. One last thing. Jim Ross is making his New Japan debut, I think, on March 1st.
Okay.
And he's saying that him and what's the other guy's name?
Josh Barnett.
Yeah, their goal is to be the best broadcasting team around. And I would probably have to say that it's not going to be that hard of work for them to do that. Mauro's doing a really good job in SmackDown. I'm grading him over the past couple weeks. I give him a solid B, and it has nothing to do with what he's doing. I really think he keeps SmackDown together. I think King is trying to find his way. King still falls flat every now and then, but at least it's more of a negative ilk. I think Saxton is kind of a waste of time. But with that being said, we talk about Daniel Bryan's speech, and the biggest problem I had with it was that when he was done, Cole has to come in and do a send off, and just does a terrible job. And then after that, where they have like the exclusive footage, JBL just is talking up a storm. It's like, dude, just shut the hell up. And I thought, I mean, Michael Cole is so bad right now that I would have to say Michael Cole, to me, is probably the worst wrestling announcer of all time. And
let me throw a couple names just to remind you here.
Okay. I know.
Don West.
Okay. Don West is the
one. Okay.
Yeah. But he was
Shivani.
I think Shivani's better than Michael Cole by far. And I hate Shivani.
By far.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, at least Shivani knew what the hell he was talking about. And Shivani.
This is the first time I've ever heard you mention the words. Tony Shivani knew what the hell he was talking about.
When you compare him to Michael Cole, Shivani is. Shivani is the what's the Dodgers broadcast? See, this is my concussions. I'm coming in. What's the Dodgers broadcaster's name?
You're killing me.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Vin Scully.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shivani is Vin Scully compared to Michael Cole.
Yeah. You're
no. This guy, since the timing is terrible, his commentary is bad. Michael Cole needs to be put out to pasture.
I mean, I have no problem with you saying Shivani's better, but in no way can he be Vince Scully compared to... Nah.
He's so... Tony Shivani is to Vince Scully as Michael Cole is to Chick Hearn.
He's not that much better than him. He can't be that much better than
him. Okay, Tony Shivani is to Greg Papa as Michael Cole is to Chick Hearn.
Papa to her.
Papa.
Wait, I don't really know who you're trying to... Yeah. Okay, I guess, because they're both bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would have made more sense if you went Fitzgerald, but, you know, we're now skewing really West Coast with all of these names we're dropping. But, yeah, I think the point is taken. Yeah. I didn't watch the exclusive footage, so I don't know how bad Cole rambled on, but I will take your word for it.
Cole didn't ramble on. It was JBL was rambling on.
Oh.
And it's just like sometimes you need to just let things be. Yeah. I think the only thing that hurt that speech was that at the end, Cole had to say like, he said something effective like, Daniel Bryan, if there's one thing we could say is grateful. It's like, dude, shut up. You know, it's like he's already done it. You know, like you don't need to chime in and ruin it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and I can understand if part of his job is to come on and say, go to the network and watch the exclusive. It still kind of ruins it, but if that's part of his job, that's not exactly his fault. But any more commentary than that is...
Tony Schiavone is to Alpha Alfred as Michael Cole is to Mary Hart. Pile driver, oh no! Yes, Mary.
What about, what was the one guy? What about Matt Stryker? What about Matt Stryker?
Yes, there you go. That's a perfect comparison. Yeah.
He's on the Matt Stryker level.
is that a little clothesline right there? Yes, Mary. Half a clothesline, half a punch.
Hey, Euchre could call a match, though.
Euchre could call a match. Tony Schiavone is to Pete Rose.
As to the chicken is to Kane.
As the gobbledygooker is to Kane. All right, so move skill number 138. I have my my big man over here, Bed Out My Donuts. I am Bad News Ramen. We will check you out in 2 weeks, and... keep it moving, right?
Yep, good. Congratulations, Daniel Bryan.
Yeah. Goodbye. Yeah. Let's end this. I take a breath.
Check it out. Brush the bat, stepping up the plate.
I'm the monster, coming in closer. I won't ya. I not never worry about competition. Listen, I can twist men into pretzels. My jet skills can outrun, cause it's fun. I'm not done. One or even two could even try. It's not an even try. Nope. I leave them cleaving. Why did you do it? I'ma screw kids and tease them and please them for the treason. That's the reason I'ma squeeze them. Make them tell and make them dwell. They're not dead. I got lead, but I won't.